Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go, hook him up!
I just whipped your ass.
You take it all away.
I'm gonna dog you until I wear your Texas ass out.
The game is ours to play.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host Ed in San Antonio, and I'm joined by my co-host Katrina. What's going on, Katrina?
Not too much.
Not too much. Cool. We have some good news and some bad news. The bad news is our other co-host is once again at another Pearl Jam concert and is too busy to do the show. But the good news is we are replacing him for the night with one Lance Storm. So, Lance, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great.
Awesome. Now, before the show started, we were talking about how cold it was in Canada, and Lance said it's about minus 20 degrees. It's just a little bit above freezing down here, and that's pretty extreme for us. So I can't even imagine how 40 more degrees lower would feel.
Yeah, it's unseasonably cold. Well, it's not uncharacteristic to reach these colds at some point in time. It's way earlier than usual, and we usually don't get this in December, but we've got huge snow drifts and, again, minus 20 Fahrenheit, minus 30 Celsius, so it's quite nasty.
How much snow is out there?
I think there's really only maybe, 6 inches to a foot. It's just we've been having high winds, so there's huge snow drifts. There was actually on the news pictures of a lady that opened her back door and it was solid snow top to bottom and she couldn't actually get out because the snow had blown against the side of her house. So depending on where you are, you could have, 4 or 5 foot snow drifts, and then other places there's only a couple inches.
Okay. I have to ask you a question. When it's like that, when it's that cold, that much snow, that much wind, does life just go on like normal? I mean, does everyone go to work? I mean, how does that work? Because if it gets to freezing and it's like a chance that there's going to be like it's going to be rain or drizzle, they like shut the city down here.
No, everything still goes on. Everybody's just a little less happy. If the roads get really bad, then school buses might not be running, but everything still goes on. Actually, a friend of mine in Edmonton posted on Facebook this morning that her kids were mad because I guess at minus 40 they stopped running the buses, but it was minus 39 this morning, so they still had to go to school.
that sucks for them.
Yeah, the difference 1 degree makes.
Yeah, right. No kidding.
She works night shift at a hospital out here, and took her 45 minutes to dig the ice over a car this morning. She couldn't even open the car door.
Yeah, because you guys aren't used to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not that bad down here yet, but it seems like it's getting there. But there's a big buzz about this show that apparently there's going to be a big question asked, and everyone's excited. Even Brian's posting on the update, and everyone's a buzz about it. So let me just go ahead and start with the big question. Have you liked Bree Olson's fan page yet?
No, despite the numerous recommendations from Facebook based on your liking of her page, I have not as yet. Although, thanks to Charlie Sheen, I actually know who she is. So
she's a cutie. It's I enjoy that page. But we'll go with the second big question, and that is, apparently you got very upset last night. I actually couldn't tell if it was from Impact or from the Brian and Vinny show, but I'll just give the floor over to you because I know you have a lot to say.
My level of dissatisfaction or my anger this morning was more at the Brian and Vinny show. Because to be honest, I tapped out on Impact early last night because I just couldn't handle the EC3 segment. Thought it was just completely pointless and stupid. And then when I listened to Brian and Vinny today at the gym, and they were talking about how much they liked this segment and how much they thought this was great, and this, you know, being their favorite act, and I'm like, this is a unbelievably terrible stuff that they're liking and thinking is great because it's funny. And I've been getting more annoyed at that I think the bar has just been dropped so low, industry-wide to a large extent, that it's the point where if it's, and Vinny's even said on the show, you know, if it's stupid and makes them laugh, he thinks it's good. And it's like, again, they were doing, you know, stupid-ass comedy for the most part on the show. I'm like, well, you know what, I'm just going to put on a DVD of a sitcom or a show that actually is good comedy and funny instead of going, well, at least I can chuckle at this stupid wrestling segment. So I was really just annoyed that they've gotten to the point where anything that's just stupid and wacky, it's like, oh, I like this. This is my new favorite act. Much like when Aiden English came out and sang on his ring entrance and on NXT, and they're like, this is the greatest act ever. And it's like, no, it's a goofy one-trick pony that's already gotten old and isn't going anywhere. And, you know, the bromans coming out and just saying bro 6,000 times and acting like immature children, while it may be funny and silly, it's the kind of stuff that turns away new fans and ensures that the fan base of this industry will never grow. And the EC3 segment, I think, was probably about the dumbest segment I've ever seen, in that I have absolutely no idea what the point of any of it would be. It's like EC3's gimmick is that he's the shits. His gimmick is that he's terrible. And it's like, well, why would anybody want to watch a guy if he's supposed to be terrible? And he's, you know, he loses to squash, well, he doesn't lose to them, but he gets beat up and you know, has jobbers and jokes get offense on him. So he's a complete useless tool as his gimmick. And
Christopher Daniels right there?
Pardon?
Did he just insult Christopher Daniels right there?
Why?
Wasn't he Curry Man?
But again, there's nothing to do with Chris Daniels. They brought Curry Man in as a comedy lighthearted character that actually did well against EC3, but he managed to win. But again, the whole point is, his gimmick is that he's bringing in people that aren't very good so he can pick up wins, and he's barely doing that. And it's again, what's the? Because I've even talked to people who are, you know, work in TNA and have written for TNA, and they're like, oh yeah, but that's his gimmick, and it's like, but it's a dumb gimmick because it doesn't go anywhere. Because if his gimmick is that he's the shit, so there's the one time payday when somebody finally just beats him up. But it's like, jobbers have gotten their hands on him already. So if he had just walked through the jobbers and nobody touches him and bragged about his great wins, at least there'd be a bigger payday when someone actually gets offense. But they've already pissed half of that away. And then in this this segment with Earl Hebner, it's like, there's not even the potential of the upset. It's like, okay, now he's just going to tell the referee to lay down. There's no upside or entertainment value to this segment whatsoever.
Yeah.
And it's like, why is Earl refusing? It's like, why would he care? Why wouldn't he just go, well, okay? And it's like, why does Brian Hebner not want to make the count? It's like, why would any of them possibly care? They're not professional.
You think he'd want to make the count so he doesn't have to watch his dad get his ass kicked in front of him?
Yeah, it's like, there's the any sane, intelligent person at all would just go, oh, okay, well, I submit. Here's your win. I guess we're on to something else. Where's the next match? Why would anybody care? And why would you put a segment on TV where it's like, well, why would anybody care? And more importantly, what is EC3's motivation for this? He's rich, so he doesn't need to wrestle and make money. His gimmick is that he's rich. So if it is that he's, you know, he just wants to be on TV and boost his ego, it's like, well, how exactly does telling a referee to lay down so you can get a fake win on him on TV in any way, shape, or form boost your ego? So is in addition to being
stupid.
The shits, yeah. So in addition to being the shits is his gimmick, being stupid is his gimmick too. And it's like, well, why would I want to spend time watching an idiot who's the shits?
And doesn't need to be there, you know?
Yeah. There's, again, I'm assuming, and it's the only payday, and then this character is dead in the water unless you completely change it. I half assume that he'll eventually fight a masked jobber that will end up being AJ Styles, and he'll get his complete ass whooped, and he'll get beat. And it's like, yeah, there'll be a pop. But then there's nothing left. He's just an idiot. And it's like, why spend all this time to build up something that's a one-time pop? And to be perfectly honest, if AJ just came back, he'd get the same pop anyways. You're wasting television time where, again, if – I don't know what this guy's real name is. He was Derek Bateman in NXT. If he's a young guy that's worth doing something with, why wouldn't you try to build him into a valuable asset rather than we're going to promote you as being the shits and terrible? I don't understand.
Do you think that maybe the reason they're doing it is because, like I say, they're focusing a lot on Dixie, on her TV time, because supposedly if she's a character that they maybe the Carters will keep it going because she's having fun and she wants to do it. Don't you think that maybe they're thinking that this is in a way building? They're convinced, like Dixie, that this is building heat for her, and it's better to make her like a bigger star or more interesting character, having heat because she's pushing her, like, untalented nephew.
I think it's a case of writers trying to tell a story without realizing it's not a story worth telling. Because it's like, well, why? It's like, oh, well, the heat is that he's Dixie's nephew, and so therefore, you know, she's protecting him and over-pushing him, and it's like, yeah, okay, that's a story, but it's a story with no payday. It's a story that doesn't go anywhere other than it's like, well, we've got this thing where, you know, Dixie's terrible at running a company, and it's like, yeah, it makes sense, but it's not a productive story. Like, I can tell you a story about a nondescript, uninteresting guy that walks down the street, never gets anywhere, never stops anywhere interesting, but it's a story. And it's like, whoa, but it's the story we're telling. And it's like, yeah, but it's not a story worth reading. And spending time and money to promote this story that's not worth telling, certainly not entertaining along the way, what's the point?
Well, I don't understand half the things they do, so I really can't defend them totally. What do you think, Char?
The heel thing with, like, bringing in your debut, just like a job guy as an opponent, just like for your debut, I think it's fine. But when you go like 2 months with it, and then the job guys are like getting over, you know, getting a lot of offense on you, it just makes no sense.
Yeah, if he at least completely squashed them and bragged, there'd be the interest of wondering if he is any good and wanting to know, you know, when he's finally going to have someone that's going to be a challenge to him. And there might be some anticipation. And again, by having him at least squash the nobodies, it's like, okay, he's an arrogant ass picking easy fights. But his gimmick isn't that he's shitty. It's that he's arrogant and maybe lazy. So at least at the end, you can have him do something. But when you spend 4 or 5 months establishing that he really struggles with these nobodies.
Flying him in every week. It was the same guys coming in every week, wasn't it? Same two guys.
Well, yeah, but that's storyline, I think, because I think the one guy actually works in production or lighting or something, and he's there anyway. So it's not like they're actually spending the money on flying these guys in, I don't think.
Well, I just meant, like, in storyline, you know, these guys are getting some offense in on you. Why would you bring them back in, you know?
Why wouldn't you find easier guys?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because if he's supposed to be finding easy pushovers, why is it he's bringing guys in that he actually is challenged somewhat by? Find crappier guys. And, well, he has. He's now fighting Earl Hebner for whatever reason. And again, putting him over, you know, and even just the promo, you know, granted Hulk Hogan was there, but it's like, you know, this guy's a Hall of Famer for sure. He's been in the ring with Andre and Brett, and it's like, oh, so he's a star because he's been in the ring with people that don't work here.
Yeah, that's one of their favorite things to do, it seems like, is put over the WWE in their own storylines.
Well, just look at the storylines. I mean, the whole unification deal, this whole Dixie character, that's like exactly what they're doing over on WWE. I mean, same time.
Yeah. To an extent, yeah.
I mean, just like the authority stuff, you know, with Triple H and Stephanie, and now Dixie's doing it, so.
At least Triple H and Stephanie don't have a wheel yet.
Okay.
Yeah, and they have Brad Maddox instead of Rockstar's, but although that doesn't bother me as much, although, again, I would, when it seems that they cherry-pick the stuff that I don't like off the other show, it's really annoying. If they take the stuff that was better, then I'd be okay with it. Because at least if you just, again, if you ignore what the other person's doing and just judge them on their own, if the show's good, the show's good. If the show's bad, the show's bad. I don't know if you know, it being similar is necessarily the deciding factor on whether it's good or not. But I think it's a case of, again, it might just be a case of, you know, the age-old angle of we've got to put the money man or the promoter on television so that they're going to keep the promotion going. Let's keep Dixie happy by stroking her ego and putting her on television. I don't know. But the main angle in your company shouldn't be that your company's run by an idiot, it's terrible here, and the top guy doesn't even want to wrestle here because it's so shitty. Seems to be a questionable creative direction to me.
Yeah. How would you compare this debut of EC3 to the debut of MVP? Because I kind of remember him kind of being like considered like kind of a joke at first, like you know, he wasn't as good as he thought he was, or I just remember him like just not doing too good and people just being kind of like the fans, you know, not impressed with him and him not being, you know what I mean?
I don't remember it well. I think his,
where he brought in his own opponent, his first match. I think it was, yeah.
But again, I don't recall watching. Again, I don't know if I was on Raw at the time and it was on SmackDown, or whether I was in developmental and or what. But again, I think the supposed heat or whatever with MVP was that, you know, he was signed to the most lucrative deal ever. He was supposed to be this, you know, the greatest prospect of all time, and the heat was that he didn't quite live up to that. I don't think it was ever that he's the shits. It's just we were expecting Michael Jordan, and we got a run-of-the-mill NBA player, where he wasn't the Michael Jordan everybody was expecting. I think was, if I remember correctly, the little bit I saw of it was more the gimmick rather than him being terrible. Now, granted, I think he did have, you know, four or five different losing streaks along the way. Although, again, I think that was meant as a punishment, not as a good creative direction.
What would the punishment be, or what was the punishment?
I think he favored some of the recreational activities that you did, Ed.
Oh, okay.
I think maybe this was when they started the wellness policy. Wasn't he like a dick to one of the testers or something? He had kind of an attitude.
Perhaps, but and again, I don't want to throw him under a bus or anything. But I vaguely remember pot stories as well. That he may have failed a pot test or two, or maybe he was rude to a tester. But I believe there was several of his losing streaks were based off of one or two of those things.
Yeah. I just remember it took a long time for him to really get any credibility with the fans. I think it wasn't until he started working with Benoit that people actually started to take him serious as a actual good wrestler.
Could be. I don't remember a lot of his debut or his run, to be honest. So he was predominantly a SmackDown guy, and I've never been as much of a follower of SmackDown.
Now, going back to EC3, I know, like, obviously, like you say, you don't like the storyline at all. Well, what do you think of him? I haven't really seen a whole lot of him. I've only seen him, like, cause I don't see Impact all the time, but is he, what do you think of his performance as the character as far as delivery, look, and his in the ring?
I'm not a fan of what I've seen so far, and I think a lot of it is, it's, I don't find the character believable. I don't know whether it's just, you know, whether he's portraying it poorly or whether it's just that that's what they want him to do, but his matches are just your turn, my turn. It's like the guy will get a whole bunch of offense on him, and then he'll just stomp him with whatever, stand up completely, no-sell everything, and hit his finish, and then walk around. It's like, well, what's the point? If you're giving them offense, is it to show that you do have a weakness, or are you doing it just for the sake of letting him do moves because you're not selling any of it when you're done? So it's like there's no heat to it. There's no meaning to it. It's just you do stuff. The guy gets a flurry. You stop him. You completely no-sell it. You hit your finish and act all cool and collective. And it's like, what's the point of any of it? You know, if he did the, you know, again, much like, you know, if you've got the, you know, the heel that accidentally trips and he tries to, you know, get up and look like he meant to do that. You know what I mean? If he would, you know, sort of sell afterwards the, you know, the relief of, oh, shit, thank God I, you know, I managed to cut him off. And you could tell that he's trying to make it look like, oh, this was easy. I know I wasn't flustered at all, but he doesn't. There's just, if he's in control, he's got his arrogant, fake, cocky look on his face. And when he's selling, he's selling. And there's no transition. There's no believability. It's just he's doing stuff. I don't think there's a whole lot of entertainment value or quality anything being done. Do you disagree? Feel free to voice an opinion.
No, I like I say, I haven't seen a whole lot, so it's really hard for me to totally like agree. I remember him being, I thought he had, I saw a little bit of him in NXT. I thought he had charisma. I didn't think he was that great of a worker at the time. I think maybe he's just put in a, he's being put in a spot where he's just not ready experience-wise. And, you know, maybe in a couple years down the line, if it was, he could do a better job if he was doing it then. But, you know, I just think they just found a good-looking guy and someone new, and they're giving him a push that he's maybe just not ready for.
But they're pushing him to be the shits. You know, even if he does the character right, it's and again, hey, he's a good-looking young kid. We need a new face on the show. Great. But push him as a valuable asset, not as a joke.
Uh-huh. Well, it's hard because he was in WWE, but he wasn't a WWE star. So it seems like, you know, they give more credibility to people who are, like, you know, stars in the past, and they don't really put that effort into new people.
Well, they're putting effort into it. It just seems to be a...
Not the right way. I mean, it's not helping him at all. It's just, you know, like you say, a short term little thing that's not going to her. What do you think, Couture?
I haven't watched much of it, to be honest with you. I watched I got all these Impacts taped on my DVR, but I usually just like read the show reports to see if I anything I need to check out. I'm so checked out at TNA recently. I just can't stand that Dixie Carter character. Is a heel. I didn't really like her as babyface, but as a heel, I just can't watch it. She's terrible.
Yeah, I don't watch a lot of Impact because to me it's funnier hearing the Brian and Vinny show without watching Impact first.
Yeah, and the sad thing is they still on occasion have really good matches.
Yeah.
But you know the Wheel of Dixie and you know silly stipulations for no reason other than that you can have. Indecisive, shitty finishes. And that's not TNA, that's industry-wide, which just drives me nuts. It's, you know, it's like, oh, we'll do a tables match, and it's like, so it just ends up being a fluke. Oh, you hit a kick, the guy falls through a table, who cares? Like, you know, it's, or the cage match where you have James Storm super kick Bobby Roode who falls to the floor, so Bobby wins. It's like, it's gotten to the point where gimmick matches are just means by which to give indecisive, shitty finishes. And it takes the drawing power away from them. You know, look at, and again, not TNA specifically, look at WWE. You know, they had the let's fight with musical instruments for no reason. One guy wins, and then the next week it's like, well, let's just fight with a bunch of other silly things, and the other guy wins, and it didn't matter. And then it's like, well, let's have a singles match, and we'll have a title shot on the line. It's like, well, what was the point of those two hardcore matches, other than to make the gimmick of a hardcore match seem pointless and meaningless?
I don't know. They had an issue with one another in the first place, Sandow and Ziggler. That was the first I heard of it. All of a sudden, they're in a ring with musical instruments beating each other over the head. So,
I think by doing the hardcore matches, they were like, in their mind, that was causing an issue. It's hard to explain, but yeah, I mean, you know, there's no reason for it before, but I guess that's what maybe why they had the hardcore matches, is able to get you interested into like a feud that didn't start, but it's just there.
I think more than anything, it's just, well, we're in Nashville, we're doing a country theme show. What can we do that's kind of, oh, hey, let's have them fight with musical instruments. And it's like, you know, the crowd wasn't particularly into any of it because it doesn't matter. And, you know, every match in this, TNA title tournament are all gimmick matches. And, you know, that drives me crazy because you remember when the day with, you know, the world heavyweight champion is supposed to be the greatest wrestling guy in your company that's good at wrestling single matches. And then you have a whole bunch of guys wrestle just a bunch of gimmick things to determine who's the best wrestler in the world. It's like, that doesn't determine that.
Yeah,
I mean,
tournament,
like you had
the title tournament should be draw enough. You don't need to add something to it. I mean, if you want it to be important, you know.
Yeah, you should. You know what I mean? It should be the, you know, who's the best wrestler in the world? We've taken these eight guys or however many they had. And if it was building the title to make it mean something, just have the matches mean something. But unfortunately, and again, it may be a necessary evil at this point, that with just so much product out there and they're just worried about ratings. And again, because they have such bad storytelling on a large degree now in the industry, that, well, let's just add tables, we'll add ladders, and it'll make more interest and people will watch, instead of going, you know, if you booked an interesting angle, people might watch. But it's easier to just make guys do stunts. And that's one of the other things that drives me nuts. When we're learning more and more about concussions and guys' bodies, you know, giving out, relying on guys just taking stunts and bumps and bumps, it's like it's really, I think, counterproductive long term. I think it's a dangerous trend. I think it's irresponsible, just expecting guys to take bigger and bigger bumps.
They've already had the unification match. They're not even waiting for pay-per-view for that one. I mean, they already taped it last night.
Yeah.
I think waiting for pay-per-view... Go ahead.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm sorry. What I was going to say is, I think I got confused with what Couture said a second ago, but I was about to talk about, do you think the main event angle at Raw might have hurt the buy rate with them doing so much?
I don't think so. I'm to the point where I don't think much of what they do is going to affect the buy rate. I think they're at a certain point. But I think if it wasn't a title unification match, then you could... You could argue that they gave too much because they had a table bump. I think they had guys hitting with ladders. They didn't climb them. But to me, granted, I think it should have been built up more and milked to more. But to me, the selling point of the pay-per-view is the whole idea of who's going to be the unified champ. It's not the, hey, show up and watch ladder and table bumps. So in that regard, I don't think they gave away too much. I think they gave a little bit. They made it seem like this match is going to be exciting, and they reminded somebody that someone's going to end up with both championships. So I think that was actually a good go-home angle, if you will. I think they needed to have built to the concept of unifying these titles way earlier, but I wouldn't be surprised if they were planning on not unifying them at this, and TLC was going to be a swerve. But then after that very first promo, like, everybody called them on it and going, oh, they're just going to switch. They're going to do a screw drop, that they realize that, crap, now we can't. So I think they sort of probably booked themselves into a corner where it's like, we have to unify them now. Because to me, the title unification, or for that matter, heel turns and babyface turns, to me, you're supposed to make us want it for a while before you announce it. or before it happens, where it was really just John Cena, you know, I think it's time for one title, and they're like, okay, next pay-per-view we're going to unify the titles, and everybody's like, what? You know, or again, where just out of the blue the guy turns just because they decided the turn's happening now. I think those are poor. You know, it's I always go back to the Dave Bautista turn on Hunter, because it was actually one of the best drawing WrestleMania main events ever. You know, there was months of television that we knew Dave was going to turn and wanted Dave to turn, and we're just dying and begging for him to finally turn on Hunter. And you know, we wanted it so bad for so long, and when it happened, it was great, and it drew a huge buy rate. Rather than just out of the blue, there's these two people, and oh, he turned on him today. Why? Oh, he had a Twitter war yesterday. It's like, oh, really? Oh, okay. You know, you want to see those things happen, and you wait for it. And again, you know, Randy Savage and Hulk Hogan, which was a huge, huge WrestleMania buy rate. I think by, you know, if not SummerSlam, Survivor Series, everybody knew that they were going to split up, that the mega powers were going to melt down. You just knew it.
Yeah.
You just didn't know when, and you didn't know exactly how, but you knew it was coming, and you wanted it so much, and it resulted in something.
And you didn't know what was going to happen. You know, you didn't see it for yourself.
Yeah, and you know, when I teach ring psychology and so forth at my school, I quite often use strippers as an analogy, and it's like, there's a reason they don't just come out naked. Because if you did, it's like, oh, okay, great. You know, they come out and they tease you and they make you want it for a while. So when you actually get there, you're happier. And it ends up being, you know, 15 minutes or a half hour or whatever it is of entertainment rather than just, all right, here I am, I'm naked. It's like, there's a reason that there's outfits and they take their time. It's like, you have to build them up, you know. It's like there's a reason people like foreplay. You know, you want to make us want it first. And I think that's lacking a lot. You know, I think it would be interesting to go back in 2013 and go, how many really bad turns were there in wrestling? You know, I think, didn't Alberto Del Rio turn babyface by teaming with the Brooklyn Brawler in Brooklyn?
And I think Brooklyn Brawler and Miz, maybe.
Yeah, I think that was the turn. He just came out and teamed with them in Brooklyn. And it's like,
yeah,
wow, when teaming with the Brooklyn Brawler is your babyface turn, you know, you really wonder if that's and again, he didn't get over as a babyface, and I think that's a big reason why. And there's been a lot of turns that just seem to be, oh, he's a babyface now. You know, poor Cody. Now, granted, now he's finally, you know, the angle they did where he got fired and brought back with the Rhodes family has been really good. But his initial babyface turn of, you know, in a every man for himself match with his heel partner, and his heel partner won, it's like, that's his babyface turn? And he wasn't over as a, you know, over a lick as a babyface. Now, when they did the thing with Randy, that great match where he lost and got fired, it's like, that was the first time people started getting behind him as a babyface. And, you know, now him and Dustin, you know, are actually doing quite well because they gave us something with some meat behind it, and they're doing so well as a team. But, you know, initially it's like, boy, why am I liking Cody Rhodes again? I hated him yesterday, and somebody else I hate was, you know, sort of mean to him once.
As far as Goldust, I've always been a big fan of Goldust since way back when he was the Natural in WCW. Are you surprised by his reinsurgence? Because he has been one of the best performers on Raw since he's come back. I mean, it seems like he's getting better and better every week.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, because I've always been a big fan of Dustin. And I've always, because I worked with him quite a bit, obviously, and to me, Dustin was always his own worst enemy. And I know he was having a lot of personal problems and stuff at the time, but it's like, he didn't think he was as good as he was, and he held himself back in the ring. And I think he seems to be in a really good place mentally and physically right now. So all Dustin needed was the confidence to know how good he was, because the guy's fantastic. And he's in shape, and he's motivated. So it's, you know, I'm just thrilled to death for the guy, because he's just a sweetheart of a person and always, you know, was better than he gave himself credit for. So he's in a position where he can step up and has stepped up, and I'm just thrilled to death for him.
I popped when he pulled out a Hurricane Rana the other night. I've never seen him do that before in my life.
I was a bit surprised because, again, granted, he's, you know, he's probably as thin and light as he's ever been, but he's still a pretty big guy. I was kind of surprised. But he's just had, you know, fire in his step and just great energy and stuff. And he's always been good. So, you know, the Shield pulled great stuff out of him, and he's always been great. So I'm thrilled to death. And, you know, their stuff has been some of the highlights for the last couple months.
That whole division has been, the best thing on for the last 3 months, two or three months. It's all the tag teams. They've really brought that back. So.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Oh, okay, speaking of tag teams, what is your – a lot of, you know, people who follow the indies are, like, very upset about this. They, like, I guess kind of insulted for the guys. But the supposed, like, few-week internship of the American Wolves, you know, Davey and Eddie, they are two of the top indie guys. I mean, they're phenomenal. They're awesome. And a lot of people are taking exception that they have to do, like, an internship when – you know, to be in the WWE. What's your do you think that's good, bad? I mean, what are your thoughts? You're a trainer and you know the business more. I mean, what do you think about? Is this something that could actually help them and help other guys, indie guys, get to WWE? This like internship thing. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, I always laugh when people get insulted about it. I know there was a lot of people, and I took a lot of heat because I wrote a commentary about it. But when WCW shut down, and there was a lot of people that were. You know, given tryouts, and they were like, you know, so offended that how dare I have to try out? I've been on TV, or former ECW guys when it shut down, and I just laughed. It's like, if you believe in your ability, what do you care? If you're good and deserve the spot, and they just, well, you got to come in and prove it. It's like, well, then just shut up and come in and prove it. If you're good, you'll come in and you'll show them that you're good, and then it's like, oh, it's disrespectful. It's like. It's a business. They're running it. They're the ones writing the checks. They can do whatever the hell they want. To me, the only people that should be afraid of tryouts are people that, you know, can't actually bring it. And, again, with the you know, the Ring of Honor style and, you know, David Rich's stuff where it's like they are a very physical move and output kind of guys, I can see where WWE was like, okay, we've got to bring them in and make sure that they – again, or work, and by working our style, I don't mean a different style of work so much, is, you know, if are they going to be too physical going five nights a week? Because, again, a lot of it is unfounded, but there's a rep that Ring of Honor guys are stiff as hell. And, again, some of them aren't. They're just, their stuff looks good. So, you know, you've got somebody like Davey Richards who quite often will kick a guy in the head 40 times in a match. And... you can watch the matches a million times, but until you get in there and actually get kicked by him 40 times in the head, you don't know if you want to work with him five nights a week. So them wanting to bring him in and see how he works with everybody, I can understand that. And if Davey's kicks are completely safe, which, again, I worked with him once in a tag, and he was perfectly safe with me. So if he is safe and his stuff just looks great, then just show up and prove it.
Mm-hmm. I had something to say. I just kind of lost my track. Go ahead, Katrina.
Lance, I was thinking about this last night when I found out you were going to be on the show. Was it difficult? I mean, like in 2000 WCW, I guess the first talk of like maybe a sale came like during the fall of that year. And, you know, just the TV shows and would. I thought they were really bad, but was it hard to stay motivated at the end there in WCW?
I didn't really find it so. I was very fortunate, though, that, again, Johnny Ace was, you know, the agent of a lot of my stuff when I was there, and he was really pushing to get me extra minutes and to do more stuff on the show. So I'm a self-motivated guy anyway. I was more of the... I am on the, you know, the biggest TV audience viewership market I've ever been on. This is the biggest platform I've ever had to perform, so I want to perform. And I was lucky that I was programmed for the most part working with others that wanted to do so. You know, so I'm in there with, you know, Chavo or Bill DeMott or, you know, Conan or, you know, Hoovy or... Kidman or some of the guys that I was working with, it's like they wanted to work hard. I wanted to work hard. Johnny was fighting to get me minutes to work hard. So I enjoyed it. I was completely, that's one of the big things too, and I guess it's because I'm a self-motivated guy. Once you've got that, you know, good contract with a major company, it's like you can breathe easy on the life front. You know what I mean? I know my bills are going to be paid. I know my check is going to clear. And also, too, when you've got, you know, the guaranteed money for the most part, you're not as stressed out and worried about politics and everything else. I know I'm making this amount of money this year. So the only thing I had to focus on was doing my job well. And I'm out there on national TV. I want to look good. I want to have good matches. I want to do good promos. So I put all of my focus into that. And, again, having, you know, Fit Finlay or Johnny Ace or Dean Mulling. Actually, it was Dean. No, Dean wasn't there as an agent. Arn Anderson was. You know, good agents that, you know, had a lot of knowledge and stuff. I found it very easy to motivate myself.
Plus, I would figure that, like, at the time, there probably wasn't a thought in your head that the company would go under or, you know, get canceled off the TV. So.
Not really, no. You know, I think for the longest time, everybody just assumed that Ted Turner would foot the bill forever. And I didn't focus on or look at much anybody else's segments or what else was going on in the company. I was just focused on what I was doing. So, again, I missed a lot of the stupidity that was going on in 2000 in WCW. And then when you started hearing the rumors of buyouts and stuff, you know, there was the fusion group with Eric that it seemed like, well, if it does get sold, it'll, at least it's Eric's one taking it over. And, you know, I had a good relationship with Eric at the time, and he was the one that's brought me in. So I was confident that, well, I'm going to end up with a job. And then when the WWE rumors hit, it was, you know, I was told I was on the short list on guys they wanted. So there wasn't a whole lot of nervous time. There was a lot of curiosity for, you know, a few weeks with this, what the hell's going on. But again, as far as motivating to do my job, I was always self-motivated. I wanted to prove that I could do it on the big stage, and I wanted to work hard. So,
how shocked were you when the word came out that Jamie Kellner had canceled the shows? I mean, I figured that pretty shocking thing.
Yeah, but again, it happened so last minute, you know, because I think I've mentioned this before. I don't know if it was on your show or not, but, you know, we had Turner execs come in and tell us that Eric Bischoff and Fusion Group have bought the company. They are now in charge, that they've given them permission to call all the shots and run the show while they finalize the paperwork. So we were told the company was sold. And then, you know, then we're hearing rumors that it's not, and we're hearing rumors that other things are going on. And then before we really know what's what, it's like, you know, WWE trucks are in the parking lot, and it's like, this is the last Nitro, WWE now owns it. Like, it really happened so fast. And when you actually have Turner execs telling you this is a done deal, and then you find out it's not, at that point in time, you don't believe anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just remember what I was kind of going to ask earlier is you were talking about Davey and his kicks and them wanting to see if, you know, he'd be too physical or whatever. Kind of related to that, I have noticed that Bryan Daniel, his kicks have, like, he's loosened up on those quite a bit. Is that something you think he kind of did on his own, or is that just the agents telling him that he needs to kind of, like, chill out on those? Not that it makes a difference, because people still go crazy for them.
I have no idea. You know, it might have been a case where, you know, in Ring of Honor, everyone was telling him to lay them in. You know what I mean? So he was laying them in more. Because there are some guys that, you know, specifically tell you, it's like, yeah, lay your kicks in. I like them if you lay them in. So it's like, he may have been, again, I really don't pay attention close enough to tell how much difference between Ring of Honor and here, but, you know, it might have been a case of if he worked stiff in Ring of Honor, it was by request. You know, much like, granted, I never could because I just instinctively can't. It's like when I worked with Van Damme, it's like, you know, if I gave him a German, he'd actually tell me, you know, please just throw me on my head. Don't bother protecting me. You know, so it's like Regal used to get, I don't know if it was Dave or Brian, but I know one of them used to, I don't want to say Barry, but comment that, you know, Regal was very sloppy throwing Rob on his head with the, you know, his little three-quarter Nelson suplex exploder thing that he'd do when Regal and I were teaming against Rob and Kane, I guess it would have been. But Rob used to ask William to do it. You know, in the afternoon, he said, oh, hey, do that thing where you throw me on my head. And Regal's like, okay. And so you don't really know how or why different people are working different ways. But, you know, in WWE, they might have asked him to lighten up, or he might have just realized that they're over at this point. I don't need to kill anybody. 5 nights a week is a lot of abuse to take, because I think they, you know, most guys are working Raw and SmackDown now, and I think they still start house shows on Friday. So you're working 5 days a week. You know, you've got to be kind to people.
How, speaking of Daniel, you did work that one ROH match and with him. How was he with you? Because I think he right now, as far as in America, he's the best worker. And is he just that good that he makes it look like he's killing people? Because in ROH, and like you said, a lot of people would say like lay it in or whatever. But how was he with you? Is he just that good that he looks like he's killing you? Like when he bends the arm over and stomps on it. I mean, you know.
He was perfectly fine with me when I worked with him in, I don't know whether it was 06, 07, whenever it was. Yeah, he was perfectly fine. Although I remember the one thing I always laugh at, and it was just him being respectful and nice, but early on in the match, he backed me in the corner, and just in a really polite, quiet voice, he's like, "Can I slap you?" I'm like, "Sure, go ahead." And he hauled off and smacked me in the face. It was just nice that he politely asked before he did.
Wow. Yeah, he's kind of cool. I mean, I pretty much sat with him at a whole UFC show in Vegas the one time, and the thing that I kind of took away from him is, like, I brought up all these matches. A lot of them were, like, when he was breaking in at Shawn Michaels' promotion. But every match, and even stuff from, like, other places, I'd bring up a match, and he would just kind of, like, get this embarrassed look on his face and kind of shake his head and just say that match was horrible. Do you think that most of the guys who get as good as Bryan Danielson feel that way about themselves in their matches?
I think so. I think unless you're super critical of your own work, I don't think you're going to progress at the rate or the level you know, if you think the match was great. Because, again, I go back and look at most of my stuff, and I don't like a lot of it. I don't think there's a match in WCW that I like. I go back and look. It's like, oh, my God, you're rushing. And it was because they were constantly yelling you to go home, and they were constantly cutting your time. But it's like, I look at all my stuff from WCW, and I'm just like, ugh, terrible. You know, and I look back at my stuff with ECW, and it's like, God, I'm doing way too much. It's terrible. I think that's something that, you know, in this industry you constantly learn, or at least if you're someone with a good work rate and a good work ethic and so forth, you constantly learn and improve, so you're going to be constantly learning new things and looking back on what you did before going, oh, man, I should have did this instead. So I think the people that become really great workers tend to be obsessed with trying to improve and trying to be as good as they can. So I think at a certain stage they're always going to be less pleased with their older stuff.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Katra.
Maybe he was just trying to blow you off because he...
Nah, he's cool. I mean, he's
a good guy.
Yeah, and he's very humble. I mean, like you said, him asking about the slap. I mean, the thing that I like this is kind of like a story. Like that night that he hung out with us in Vegas, he was like helping Peach and Brian having their grappling battle thing. Well, that night he hung out with us, and at the end of the night, you know, I see him at the exit on the other side of the bar, and I can tell he's saying goodbye to Roderick and Peach, and he takes like a step to leave. He stops. He turns around. He looks around. He makes his way through the crowded bar to come up to me and tell me that it was an honor to meet me and shake my hand. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. It's like, here's my favorite wrestler in the world is telling me it's an honor to meet me. I mean, he blew me away. I mean, I will always have the most respect for that guy. I mean, you know, that was just like, that just meant so much to me as far as respect. I mean, I was like, that just blew my mind.
Yeah, Peach probably put him up to it as a rib.
Maybe one of some.
No, Peach would have had him like flip me off and run off or something.
There you go.
But go ahead, Katrina.
Lance, how'd you enjoy working the House of Hardcore with Terry Funk?
Sorry?
How did you enjoy working the House of Hardcore with Terry Funk? Didn't you work that?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I love Terry Funk. Probably if it was the, you know, my favorite person or the guy I respect most, just somebody that I've really looked up to, Terry's either number one or number two for sure. I just love the guy. So getting to hang around with him and work with him again was just so much fun. Although, again, much like we just mentioned about not liking your matches, I think if I went back and watched the match itself, I probably wouldn't like it. I like things being a little tighter and crisper. It really was just sort of a fly-by-your-seat-of-the-pants and not as, you know, a bit more of a cluster than I like with my matches. So if I watch the match back, I probably won't enjoy it. But I had an absolute ball the whole time I was doing it. You know, the response Terry got for his ring entrance was incredible, and probably wasn't a dry eye in the house. So it was just great. I loved just being in the ring with the guy. We actually had to be limited because he was hurt and almost 70. Although, in hindsight, he's probably still tougher than me, injured in 70 than I am. So I just loved the guy, and it was great too because it was a 2-hour drive back to LaGuardia after the show, and the guy who gave me a ride was also giving Terry a ride, so it was just Terry, me, and the driver guy in the car for a couple hours, and just, you know, chatting and sharing stories with Terry Funk is just always fantastic.
Hey, you did you tell him about your epic meeting with Dennis Demp?
Yeah, I'll take the meeting with Terry Funk over the one with Dennis Demp. what did you say, Couture?
I said, have you worked with him before?
Yeah, I traded the U.S. title with him in WCW on house
shows.
That's right.
That they never acknowledged.
No, but WWE acknowledges it now on their title history. the match in Amarillo with Terry was probably the most fun I've ever had in my life, all time, all my life. Just that, again, because I respected and loved Terry so much, getting to work with him the first time, and again, that was 13 years ago. So Terry was a lot younger, really able to go, and it was in Amarillo. So I had lots of good cheap heat, and Terry was just over like a god. And we went out there and had a really fun, really good match that I really enjoyed. And again, it was just everything was perfect because they even wanted to do the switch. So getting to put Terry over in Amarillo and the crowd reaction was just amazing.
How were his punches in that match? Because I could imagine him being pretty excited. I mean, I've heard that he can be very soft with his punches, or he can like really lay them in. How was he in that match?
His punches are there, but again, because he is very skilled at what he does, he at least hits you in safe places. So while you are on occasion, and again, the House of Hardcore one, he was clubbing me pretty decent. I don't remember specifically the punches in Amarillo 13 years ago, but I think they were snug. But he hits you in safe places, which is the proper way to do things. He's not hitting you in the jaw. He's not hitting you in the ear. So the fact that he's laying him in is no big deal. You know what I mean? Again, I've worked with Jericho a million times, and Jericho generally works stiffer than Terry ever does. So.
Mm-hmm. We got about 5 minutes. Let me throw out the plugs right away so I don't run out time later. Everyone, check out angrymarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at angrymarks.com along with a lot of other shows. You can always download our show here at blogtalkradio.com/Couture and older shows at blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can follow me at Twitter at Ed in San Antonio, and you can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo or Ed in San Antonio. Couture?
Yeah, you can follow me at Couture35 on Twitter, and also go to youtube.com/Couture. Got a bunch of playlists with tons of wrestling on there. If you like Memphis, they got full episodes from different years of Memphis up there, so something for everybody up there.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to get Pro Jam updates, I guess you can go to Proper Jam at Twitter, at Proper Jam. And Lance, do you agree with us that it's very weird and creepy that this Pro Jam fetish that Craig has?
I don't care one way or the other. Actually, they were just in Calgary last week. I actually almost went in that I met a guy that could have hooked me up, and I forgot that it was the week that it was, so I ended up not going. I think anyone that's a diehard fan, it's like, you know what, more power to them. Support who you like.
Cool. And before I let you draw your plug, Lance, I know, like, when you do talk about your school, you mentioned a lot that you get a lot of Australians. And I was wondering, what's the ratio between men and women? Because I know that there are quite a bit of women wrestlers in Australia who are actually quite good. Have you had any training any of them?
I've trained a few women from Australia, yeah. Well, again, Emma in NXT, obviously the most famous of the Australian girls that I've worked with. But, yeah, I've had a few female Australians come through, and then obviously lots of guys as well. Again, I think I've had three or four Australian girls and probably a dozen or two Australian guys. So.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, Lance, feel free to plug your school and anything else you'd like to plug.
Alrighty. Storm Wrestling Academy is my school. You can go to stormwrestling.com or stormwrestlingacademy.com. Either will take you to the same place. You can get information on my school. Again, the big plus is I'm the guy running all the classes. I'm the guy in the ring training with you, running the drills and actually having matches with my students. 3 12-week sessions a year starting in January, May, and September. They book up early, so book well in advance. You can also follow me on Twitter at @LanceStorm. I'm on Facebook, too, if you search for Lance Storm, or, again, click on the link on my website, you'll find me there. But to be honest, that doesn't get updated all that much. At Lance Storm on Twitter is the most frequently updated, and then the website takes you everywhere you need to go as far as my school and stuff. So that's probably all I need to plug. Oh, actually, no, it isn't. December 15th in Mississauga, I'll be wrestling Chris Hero for Smash Wrestling. If you go to @SmashWrestling on Twitter, they can fill you in on the details. But December 15th in Mississauga, and December 21st, I'm returning to Hanover, Germany for the first time in, I think, 18 years to wrestle my old nemesis, Dirty Dan Collins, in his retirement match. He's retiring, having his last match there, and I'm the one going back to face him. So December 21st in Hanover, Germany.
Now, I wasn't even aware that he was still wrestling because I hadn't heard his name in a while. Has he been very active? I mean, or is he just doing shows here and there?
I think he's been relatively inactive. I think he's been wrapping up for a while now, and I think it's finally
decided. Is this the way to make it official?
I believe so, yeah. And he asked me if I'd be willing to have his last one with him, and I said absolutely. So I'm heading back to Hanover.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And last week, me and Cotrere, we went over the Wrestling Observer Awards. And I don't know if you would know them off the top of your head, but do you have any guys like maybe surprises that you'd like to throw out in some of the categories as far as someone you think is deserving of like an Observer Award that maybe not people don't know a whole lot about?
I don't even know the category, so I'm going to be of no use here.
Okay. Couture, you got any last questions?
No, that's it.
Okay. Well, how about this question? I'm sure you voted for the Hall of Fame, for Dave's Hall of Fame. Who did you vote for, if you don't mind talking about that?
To be honest, this year I didn't. I have in past years, but this year I was just super busy with doing far more bookings this year. I've been hitting the gym, and my class was extremely busy this year, so I had no time to do anything, and by the time I realized I hadn't sent in my ballot, it was too late. So I didn't vote for anyone, unfortunately, this year.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, Lance, we really appreciate you coming on the show tonight. So we want to wish you a good night and stay warm.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Take it easy. Cool. Couture, we got about a minute. I know you said you had to go in an hour. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we go?
Did you watch The Walking Dead this week?
Yes, I did, and it was fucking awesome.
I thought that was the best episode they've had in the show's history.
Yeah, it's like a lot of people are saying, "Oh, they should have that's how they should have ended last year's." But I'm kind of glad they did it the way they did. I mean, it was real weird because you had the one episode where he does the face turn, basically, right?
Oh, the governor? Yeah.
Yeah, he does a face turn like on the third to the last episode. He does a face turn, right? And then the next episode, he goes back mega heel again. And then, you know, I mean, in a way, I kind of would have wished his character would have been around as a main bad guy throughout. But, you know, I mean, he did end pretty soon in the comic book. I mean, but, you know, for a way to go, that was a way to go. I mean, that episode was fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm. I kind of like the thing where, you know, they get in all these, you got the main bad guy and the main hero, and, you know, it's just like typical. The hero's just he's going to beat the shit out of the main bad guy and he's going to kill him. But no, he's on the verge of killing Rick. Like, he was it was just about over for him, and then Michonne with the sword. When he killed Herschel, that was fucking brutal.
Yeah, that was brutal. And then it was brutal when he died. He killed him at first, and then it got worse.
Yeah.
When he was like crawling away. But what I liked about it, and what I'm kind of excited for, and we'll see what they actually do is, okay, it ended with Glenn and the bus taking off. It ended with Rick and what's the little punk?
Coral.
Running off in one way. Okay, it ends with the black guy running off with the kids this way, and then it ends with the new black guy who's the alcoholic and what's his name's sister and Maggie going that way, and then, you know what I mean. So it's like, you know, it could be a pretty good cursed couple episodes, like having them reunite. You know what I mean.
Yeah, it was time for him to. I think the prison was played out. It was time for him to get something else. I mean, you only stay there so long. You gotta move out. I thought when we were all on the bus, I thought that's it. That thing's fixing to blow that fucking bus up with all those people in it. Thank goodness it didn't. I'd hate it. I like the black guy. You know, he's like, what's her name? Carol killed his woman. You know, burned her. But
yeah.
She was the one that taught those kids how to, like, shoot and everything, and they ended up saving his life. So.
Oh, yeah, that was crazy when those little girls killed those two.
Just shot her right in the head.
Yeah. And then there's going to be new characters coming out, like comic book characters coming out pretty soon, too, when they come back. So that should be pretty cool. But, yeah, it was awesome. I really enjoyed it. I was actually fucking kind of pissed because that was the first day for we went in like 2 hours early to UPS that day because it was supposed to be like one of the worst days. So I forgot the clear space off my DVR. So I'm driving, and then my mom had been visiting that day. So I was like, I called, "Are you still at the house?" And she's like, "Yeah." I go, I told her to, you know, how to check to see if there was space. So she's like, "No, it's 100% full." So then I try to get her to delete a couple things, and you know how old people are. They just don't want to learn or don't want to succeed at using technology. So it's just like I'm trying to drive going across. I'm like, just forget it. And then I go to work. And I'm like just hoping maybe she kept trying and figured it out. So I haul ass. I had like I get a little time between the UPS and the paper route on Sunday. So I haul ass home, check it. No, it's 100%. It's not on there. I'm like, fuck. So I go to a computer. Finally, I find I have to try like about 20 different links to get one that actually like works without having to do a lot of shit. You know, some of them want you to take a survey or you got to download this shit, this, that. I'm like, I was getting fucking frustrated. Finally, I found one. I start watching it. It starts buffering in a minute. So I'm like, oh, this motherfucker is going to – I got to let it pause and just fucking do other shit. So, yeah, I ended up watching it with enough time to get back to the paper route without being too late. But, yeah, it was badass.
Do you not have, like, season passes on your DVR or anything?
I don't like to put, like, to record seasons because, like, the shit adds up too fast. You know what I mean?
Oh.
So the only thing that I have that's reoccurring on right now on my DVR is I have Modern Family and Sons of Anarchy. I used to have Walking Dead, but I think when I deleted a bunch of them, I kind of accidentally took it off for some reason.
Oh, okay. Well, I got one of those. I got like DirecTV, and I got one of those massive DVRs that runs everything and you can like run through every TV in the house and stuff like that. So
yeah, mine's not like that. Mine's just the basic little Time Warner DVR thing.
Okay.
But I guess we'll go ahead and end the show. I guess we'll come up with something next week. I don't know if there's another fucking Pearl Jam concert or not, so we'll see if Craig comes back.
We'll see if he comes back.
Yeah. At all, right? This might be like his way to retire without really telling us, you know.
Yeah.
But cool, man. So everybody come back next week, and we will talk to you guys then. And of course I can't, here it is.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the matrix shit. Let's go hook him up!
I just whipped your ass.
You
take it all away.
I'm gonna dog you until I wear your Texas ass out.
The game is ours to play.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight. Thank you.